And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to the Forum Club Lakers podcast from The Athletic. I'm Bill Oram, joined as always by Anthony Slater and Yo Von Buha. Fellas, what's going on?
Nada. You know?
Great. compelling start.
Compelling podcast content. Yeah, just getting ready for the next week.
It's transaction season. It's like one of two really high intensity. It's the lower of the two, but it's one of the more high intensity weeks of transactions. And the Lakers seem like they're kind of an outside looking in, ready to just kind of clean up the scraps a little bit, right? I mean, just buyout heaven down in LA.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of what we've been talking about for several weeks now as we're kind of moving toward this and the trade deadline. If guys can't get moved, you know, they're going to start, you know, getting their walking papers, and you're going to be kind of the moment of truth with some of these names we've been hearing about, you know, Trevor Ariza and Andre Drummond, you know, some of these other guys that I think we've talked about ad nauseum. Jovan, where are you at on this? You think the Lakers are going to pull the trigger on anything trade wise, or is it just going to be sit back and wait to see who becomes available?
I think if they do a trade, it would probably have to be for someone that's going to move the needle a bit, just because Kelly Eco just did a story for The Athletic on PJ Tucker and his trade market. And he asked me to propose a deal from the Lakers side. And I really struggled coming up with a deal of, you know, like who would the Lakers trade to get PJ Tucker? And that's what, before even getting into, like, we don't know what shape PJ Tucker is going to be in. He's obviously struggled this season, not been the PJ Tucker we've seen the last few years. So before even factoring in, like, you know, what type of production he can give you, just making the contracts match up, it's like, are they going to give up a KCP or a Montrezl Harrell or even a Talen Horton Tucker or Alex Caruso to get a PJ Tucker? I don't think so. So now you're left with Wes Matthews and Alfonso McKinney and maybe Keefe, but then now you're losing two rotation guys for a guy that, like, PJ Tucker hasn't really been better than even Keefe, I would say, this season. And I think he is better.
The Rockets don't want that, right?
Yeah, the Rockets want a legit, like, young. Yeah, they want picks. They want young guys. So I don't see them trading the 2027 pick for PJ Tucker either. So, I mean, PJ is one guy, but
2027 is so far away. Jovan's going to be like 30 then.
But I think most likely they just stand pat and play the buyout market. And it's just whoever is the top big or 3-and-D wing. They could sign a couple guys. I think the Lakers are probably the top destination, you know, them or the Nets. But I do think if they end up, you know, making a trade, it's probably for a bigger fish that would have to include a Montrezl Harrell or a KCP or someone key in the rotation, but they're not just going to do that for anybody. It has to be someone who's probably starter level, I think.
The Warriors didn't make an in-season trade from February 2014 through February 2019. Five straight deadlines when they were winning, or when they were going to five straight. They won five straight West titles, won three NBA titles. And it was because, like, they were in whatever, the catbird seat basically at the deadline, where it was like they're the prohibitive favorite, so they don't necessarily have to shake anything up like the Lakers are right now. And also, because they were the prohibitive favorite and they were in an appealing market, they were the most sparkling trade deadline, or I mean buyout destination. So they could get an impact guy with literally not paying for a high impact guy and not giving up an asset for a high impact guy. And to me, that's where the Lakers sit. Like, why use an asset when you know there's going to be 3 to 4 guys to choose from, and you know all of them probably will want to go to the Lakers first, but at least one or two of them will, and you can sit there and basically choose from that, and you're going to pay a vet minimum or whatever for it. And also, as for Tucker, where it changes, like, I do think Tucker is going to be the one that has to get traded for because he's on a lower deal than like an Aldridge or a Drummond, who just like almost are untradeable. But I don't even really like Tucker as a fit on the Lakers. I like him a lot of other places. The Lakers don't need a PJ Tucker, as you mentioned. They need a like Ariza or a Drummond or even a JaVale McGee, we could talk. But like, you know, that positionally is what they need to me more than like a small ball PJ Tucker center.
You guys understand the mechanics of the JaVale thing, right? And how that would need to go down. And if anyone listening doesn't, it's not so simple that the Cavaliers could just buy out JaVale. He needs to be, and I mean, the Cavaliers could buy out JaVale, but he couldn't then sign with the Lakers. There needs to be another move in between for him to be able to come back this season. So if the Cavaliers traded him, let's say as part of an Andre Drummond trade, let's make up a team. I don't know, to the St. Petersburg Raptors, and the Raptors then waive JaVale, the Lakers could then sign him for the rest of the season. But there needs to be sort of an extra arm of a deal. It's not something where the Lakers could just sign him off the buyout market if Cleveland cut him loose.
Is that where the Raptors are playing now? St. Petersburg, exactly?
Yep, Russia.
That's just so odd. That remains odd. And it's because we're not traveling this season. You turn on a Raptors game, and in your mind, they're playing in Toronto, right?
Yeah.
But it's like, oh, this team was in a back-to-back last night in Orlando and took the drive up the road. I don't know. It's just because we all know the NBA circuit. It's just weird that the Toronto Raptors are in Tampa right now. But anyway.
We the north of Miami.
They are north of Miami. That's true.
Like, how many people do you think have, like, canceled their subscriptions to The Athletic because of my puns on this podcast?
Maybe seven. Not many. Just, like, you know,
I mean, that is a significant number. Like, that is a significant blow to the company. I really hope that, you know, management doesn't listen to this and find out that you think that I've cost the Athletic seven paying customers.
But then you write one of your terrific features and you load 17 more in the barrel and really are plus 10. I mean, it's like, you know, if we're talking plus minus, you're on the plus. It's okay.
Am I the Alex Caruso of plus minus God?
Oh my! Let me ask you guys. So if the Lakers basically have their choice of likely buyout candidates, is it definitely Drummond, or who do you think is like prime target number one?
I mean, I don't know why it wouldn't be Drummond. I suppose if LaMarcus Aldridge is on the market, you can have a conversation about whether LaMarcus is appealing. But like, to me, Drummond does the things that made you so lethal last year with your bigs. He can be a younger, more athletic, more frankly dynamic Dwight Howard at this point. So to me, like, that would be, and Jovan, I know you are your team get another wing. And I think that that's important also, but you're not going to be able to add a player of the caliber, you know, a wing who is as good at what he does as Andre Drummond is at what he does. And so at this point, if you're stockpiling and trying to become as fearsome of a lineup as you can be to, you know, survive the playoffs, I think it's Drummond.
Yeah. I think he's the talent play, and I'm a fan of the talent play where you just get the best player available. And he also happens to serve a need. I do think it puts them in a interesting spot with Mark and Trez, where, you know, you're not going to be playing three of those guys, especially with AD, you know, eventually having to shift over to the five, at least for some of the game. Maybe with Drummond, you're closing with him and AD at the five and the four, but AD is going to have to play some five in the playoffs. It just doesn't make sense not to. So I don't know, you know, in that case, do they look to move Mark or Trez if they somehow land Andre Drummond? Although you might not know that, you know, before the trade deadline, but I don't really see Mark or Trez accepting a third string center role. You know, maybe in this instance, it probably becomes Mark, you know, he probably just shifts to the bench and then you start Andre. But to Bill's point, I do think the wing position is still a position of need. Like, and that's where even PJ Tucker, while I agree they don't necessarily need him, but I do view him as a clear upgrade, kind of contradicting myself here, but a clear upgrade over the Wes Keefe position. And again, I know he hasn't necessarily been like much better than those guys, but I do think, similar to what we could see with Blake Griffin in Brooklyn, like him going to a contender, being in a new situation, could bring out the best of PJ Tucker. But I do think, you know, be it PJ Tucker or Ariza or whoever is a 3-and-D guy that hits the market, I think the Lakers could, especially shooting. I think shooting is more important. I think defense, you have AD, you have LeBron, you have Kyle Kuzma. I think KCP has been solid defensively. Like, you have enough defensive pieces, I think, on the wing, but I do think they could use an injection of shooting, because that at this point is this team's probably biggest flaw. I think overall is they cannot shoot around LeBron and AD, and defenses are going to load up against them in the playoffs. And if they can't make them pay at a reasonable rate, that is really going to affect them in certain series. So I think finding a knockdown shooter at the 2-4 position is, to me, their biggest need overall.
JJ Redick.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Jovan, I admire your ability to care so much because, like, I went through this last... I mean this sincerely. I went through this last year, and Slater and I were doing the podcast. Slater was, you know, writing about the Lakers during the during the bubble. You know, the Lakers were the worst three-point shooting team in the entire effing bubble last year. And it was the same thing. It's like, oh my God, their shooting is going to catch up with them. And then the playoffs start, and they were, I mean, listen, they weren't setting the world ablaze, but they were capable, credible three-point shooting team. The offensive concerns from the opening stages of the bubble were not really valid. It just wasn't a problem. And so it's like, yes, I see everything you're saying. But because last year, and I know it's different years, and I know I shouldn't fall into this trap, that it's a logical fallacy. You know, there'd be a lot of professors of rhetoric who'd be very mad at me for making this point. But it worked out just fine last year. You know, KCP turned it on when it mattered. So it's like, how many knots do the Lakers need to tie themselves into to improve the personnel when they're playing in a season without fans? There's a lot, real lack of motivation. It's the toughest mental season ever. And like, they're just trying to get to the playoffs. Like, I just have some trust in the players that we're talking about. Wait, it's KCP, who's in his fourth year with the Lakers, LeBron, who's LeBron. You know, I feel like what we're seeing is not what we would see from the same group of players when we get to the playoffs. So I think anything you do really needs to be on the margin so that you're not, you're not making a move that ultimately derails what you might already have, but you're just not seeing because of the circumstances.
So the tough balance I see, like, I do think that Drummond is the best choice for them because of Anthony Davis insurance, essentially. What Bill's saying is right. I mean, I think if they just went into the playoffs healthy, they do have a sturdy enough rotation and a proven playoff rotation that they're the title favorites. And I would, you know, unless somebody makes a big splash this week that I don't expect, they will remain the title favorites until they're knocked off. I mean, we've discussed the Davis situation, and I think a guy like Drummond gives you the talent upside of if Davis misses four straight playoff games, if for some reason he's not playing the entire playoffs, or just, you know, even if you have to rest him one night, or, you know, minutes restriction when he comes back, whatever. Like, Drummond is more of an injection of, like, just offensive punch, offensive talent that you're missing from Davis. He doesn't rim protect nearly. I mean, he's obviously not nearly as good as Davis, but you know what I mean. Like, it's just clearly the biggest talent to then put in Davis's place. But the problem I see is Drummond is probably going to want guaranteed playing time, guaranteed shots, like that. Like, a lot of these buyout guys, especially ones at Drummond's age, he's younger than like a LaMarcus Aldridge. They want to showcase themselves for the contract this offseason. They want to go somewhere and be featured. You know, it's part of the reason why he remains upset in Cleveland is because he got knocked to the bench for Jared Allen, and they were posting him up a bunch and like letting him run the offense at times early in the season. And then they stopped doing that because it wasn't really efficient and they were doing a youth movement there. So I'm not sure, because of the dynamics Jovan laid out earlier with Montrezl Harrell and Marcus Gasol, like, you can't just say, yes, Andre Drummond, you're coming in and you're definitely going to get 25 minutes and a bunch of shots and be a featured player. But if you knew he was going to basically behave and not care about his role, then you would want him, I think, the most, just because I do think Davis insurance does matter.
Yeah, I mean, and that's something we need to talk about. I mean, since we last spoke, I guess it was 2 weeks ago that we last did this, right? We know more about the Anthony Davis injury. Not that we know much about the Anthony Davis injury, but we know he's not back yet. You know, we know that he, you know, the original 4-week timeline has passed, or tomorrow, I guess tomorrow will pass, but he's going to be out, you know, for another week and a half or so. You know, he's going to be reevaluated in another week and a half. And there's not really a great sense of urgency. And Jovan, I mean, you've been on these same calls I have been, so tell me your sense of it, but I don't get the sense that, you know, he's ramping it up to come back at the end of that 2 weeks that they advised us of late last week. It seems to me like this might be a situation where, you know, at the end of 2 weeks, then he'll ramp it up more and then be reevaluated in another 2 weeks. And, you know, so when are we seeing Anthony Davis back? I mean, is it mid-April? Like, is that optimistic? I mean, and is this an injury that is going to go away? Or at some point, does it just become a matter of pain tolerance? And Anthony Davis, you know, incredible at a lot of things. And like, you know, but like, you know, playing through pain is not really one of his strengths. I mean, he like, you know, I think he would tell you this. I mean, it's like, it's part of why you see him go down so often, and why his, you know, so many, you know, minor injuries or non-injuries, but just getting hit, like, look so bad in the moment, because I think he has a relatively low pain tolerance. And so, you know, if he has an injury that is about managing the pain, what could that mean for the long term for the Lakers? But I mean, what's just your sense, Jovan, Ben, of kind of the messaging from the Lakers on AD?
It seems like it's going to be a while. I mean, I think I'm with you in it probably being early to mid April at this point. I mean, you and I literally, I think right before the Zoom call, we're talking about it, and we were like, sounds like he's going to be out at least two more weeks. And that's exactly what Frank Vogel ended up saying a few minutes later. I mean, it feels like they're going to be extra cautious with it. There was the report from Chris Haynes that he was going to be out 3+ weeks a few days ago. And then we followed up and asked Frank about that. And he said that it was still a 2-week reevaluation period. But, you know, that was the original diagnosis, was that it was 2 weeks and then he'd be reevaluated, and it got pushed back. So to me, all the messaging is leading towards him being out longer. And I think for the Lakers, like, fortunately, that they're amid a pretty easy stretch of schedule, and I think this is a nice time for them to kind of boost their record and kind of get back into maybe the 2 seed and sort of bolster LeBron's MVP chances. But, you know, besides that, like, I just think you got to be cautious with it. And you know, to your point, tendinosis is not something that just goes away. You know, I saw it with the Clippers and Kawhi Leonard and him having to load manage because of that, and that was in his quad, which I think, you know, could be better or worse depending on how you look at it. So I think for the Lakers, there really is no reason to rush him back, aside from, I think, continuity is the one concern, not record. I think they're fine, you know, regardless of seeding, but it's just the having the reps and the continuity with him and the starters, him and the closers, him and some of the bench. Like, you're going to miss out on that. But aside from that, I think you just have to play it safe and bring him back whenever he's physically able to kind of withstand the discomfort that's just going to come from playing through this.
He was taking jumpers out in Chase Center before the game, whatever day that was.
Monday
night. And he was still like, they were completely flat-footed jumpers. You know, he's not leaping off that foot, Achilles, whatever, right now, which, you know, obviously the doctors know if he should or shouldn't be, and they rightfully are taking a cautious approach, but, you know, how many days, how many weeks now are we from that just one step move in Denver?
It was February 14th.
Yeah. He's going to end up missing over half the regular season.
Man.
Which is, yeah, I mean, wild.
How many games has he missed now?
17.
He's missed 17? Oh, yeah. Because, like, if you go back and look at, like, not just with this injury, I think it's like 13 with this injury. Because it was
maybe 10 not. I mean, break, but, probably but, like, somewhere but, like, around on, half.
In total, yeah, it could be close to 30. Yeah. Or I mean, maybe over. Slater, are you back to going to games now? Are you going to games at Chase?
I've been to, like, 8 this year. I mean, I can. You get tested before you go in, which, like, kind of is a bonus because, number one, you feel obviously a bit safer. Plus, you know if you have it or not, I guess. You know, I don't know. It's like, and it's free to get tested. Or I guess it's on their bill. I don't know. But yeah, I've been to, like I said, about 8. It's fine. I prefer when fans are there. And that does sound like it's coming, by the way. Slowly.
You know, Gavin Newsom had an update on that 2 nights ago, I want to say, and kind of was circling maybe mid May. And, you know, I know some people who are optimistic that it could be before that, it could be April. You know, that would, I mean, listen, I mean, everyone would win if fans could safely be in the building, you know, in terms of energy in the building, you know, fans have the opportunity to go see their team again. Sports are better with fans, I think is what we've learned over the last year. By the way, guys, I'm breaking news on this podcast, which will not be breaking news by the time people listen to it. But I just saw a tweet that apparently there's an Oklahoma City Miami deal involving Trevor Ariza. So I know we've talked about Trevor Ariza as a possibility for the Lakers kind of off and on. The Lakers tried to trade for him a couple years ago before he landed in Phoenix. So before Phoenix traded him to Washington. So it looks like he's heading to Miami.
For Myers Leonard in a second round pick per Woj, which I assume Myers Leonard will get sliced off the roster quite quickly in Oklahoma City. But yeah,
easiest $9 million Myers Leonard ever made.
I don't know. He's made some pretty easy money in previous years. Remember, I think he was part of that 2016 offseason where he got huge money in Portland, and then pretty soon after was like out of the rotation. So he's made some money in his life, not playing much. So yeah, that takes an important, useful piece for the Lakers off the board. Probably the one that would slide into the rotation the easiest, right? And but we also don't know what Trevor Ariza looks like. He, among all these guys we're talking about, he literally hasn't played this season. He never even went to camp with the Thunder. So
right.
You know what it reminds me of with Miami, though? It reminds me of the Andre Iguodala move they made last year.
It's exactly the same.
Yeah, Iguodala was on Memphis, but he was never really on Memphis. When the Warriors traded him there, he like never even left the Bay Area. Waited all the way till the deadline, and then got traded there and actually signed a big extension. I'm curious if Miami works behind the scenes and maybe they're going to sign Ariza to, like, you know, give him another year and like 10 mil or something like that. I don't know. But
seems like a lot for Trevor Ariza at this point.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. It is.
I'm surprised that was the price. I mean, they're basically just getting a 2027 second round pick. I feel like someone else could have topped that.
But. No, so I think think about what we were talking about here. We're talking about Trevor Ariza being a buyout guy.
Yeah.
And it's like a 2027 second rounder is better than a buyout because, you know, they're going to buy out Myers Leonard probably now, just like they would have bought out Ariza, but they now have a pick. And that's just Sam Presti's MO. I mean, he just got a small asset instead of zero assets.
I get it from OKC's point of view. I'm saying I'm surprised no one else on the market could have topped that, like just with a slightly better offer.
Yeah, but who want, you know, like the Lakers wanted, I'm sure, like were in the market, but they weren't going to give up absolutely anything for him. They don't have money to match, you know.
Yeah. I mean, it's like the Lakers contract wise, I mean, maybe you could have put together, you know, Wesley Matthews and, you know, maybe Markieff. Does that get you there financially? But
then you're
losing a key big and then a second. So you're getting there financially. Now you're giving up an asset, and, you know, you probably don't care a whole lot about assets right now, but I don't know. Like, I don't know that the Lakers need to be playing in that price range as low as it is. Like, I just think that the Lakers have a roster that can contend. They can let the market settle and they'll be fine. Like, I just don't think they need to get caught up in any bidding wars.
A buyout of their choice, basically. Yeah. I mean, like, I agree. Don't make an in-season trade when you're, like, the heavy favorite. I don't think that's the way to go. Unless it's, like, a must-have guy. And I don't know of a Trevor Ariza who hasn't played basketball in how long? He didn't even play in the bubble. He hasn't played since March 2019.
Yep, it's more than a year. Whenever he played his last game for the Blazers, which would have been, you know, March 10th, March 11th, something like that, March 9th. So, yeah. We've talked ourselves out of Trevor Ariza. The Lakers dodged a bullet with Trevor Ariza.
That's gone, yeah.
Good restraint by Rob Pelinka.
I want to be clear, too, that I'm not necessarily advocating for them to force a trade. I think it's going to be hard for them to make a trade unless they give something up of substance, right? Like, I just think they don't have that, like, guy making 8 to 12 million that's expendable. Everyone in that range is a valuable part of the rotation. So to give up one of those guys, I think you're going to have to be getting something back that's pretty valuable. But I do think, though, if there is an opportunity to just add someone, like, I think that Keith West spot in particular, you know, kind of the 10th, 11th spot in the rotation is very upgradable, right? Like, it is, I think there are going to be multiple guys that are probably better than either one of those. I know, I guess Keith has been playing better recently, but like kind of just looking at his season overall. And so that's more so what I'm talking about. But I do think if they stand pat and don't add anybody and just keep it, maybe they sign Damian Jones for the rest of the season, keep the 14 player roster. Like, I think they're in great shape. I just think if you can get better, like, why not?
Was that keeping Damian Jones? Is that happening? Do you think?
No. Hey, he looked good against Minnesota.
Hey,
they do not have a, I mean, what are they gonna, I mean, they can sign someone else to a 10-day, I guess, when his expires in like 4 days, but I am really interested in what happens there, because they need a center. Marc Gasol is out, you know, seemingly indefinitely with, you know, I mean, if we call a spade, it seems like likely that he contracted coronavirus and is recovering. He's been out just with the health and safety protocols for several weeks now, and we don't have a clear sense of when he'll come back and or how much time he would need to kind of ramp back up. So, you know, they need a center, and I think it's possible that they do end up signing Damian Jones because of that, which leads me to my next point about the Lakers, since we're talking about, you know, upgrading kind of at the back end of the bench. Jared Dudley has a torn MCL, and I think it is at best questionable of whether or not he would be healthy enough to participate again this season, by the playoffs. And he talked about yesterday that, you know, he's foregoing surgery. He's hoping it'll heal naturally. Surgery would mean he'd be out 4 to 6 months, which would certainly rule him out for the rest of the year. So he's hoping to heal and come back by the end of the playoffs. But it's like, man, Jared Dudley, for as good as he is in the locker room and for as good as he is on the bench and with the young guys and helping kind of be sort of a conduit between LeBron and the rest of the roster. I mean, is there going to be a point where the Lakers need Jared Dudley's roster spot? I don't know. I mean, that's the first thing I thought about when we heard he had a torn MCL. I don't know. Jovan, what do you think?
Yeah. And he was talking about playing next season, right? Like he was saying he wants to be on the roster next season. And I just think at some point he brought up Udonis Haslem, and I know that's worked for Miami. But
that's such a waste of a roster spot.
Yeah,
just be an assistant coach. You're already an assistant coach, essentially. His playing days appear very over.
And that's what, you know, a couple of those types of questions were posed to him. And he basically said that there are certain things he can say as a player on the team and in the locker room that he could not say as an assistant coach. He's like, there's things I can say that even Jason Kidd, who's a Hall of Fame point guard, can't say as an assistant coach. So he was kind of making that case, but I'm with you. Like I've been kind of saying since the beginning of the season, like I thought he should have been the guy that they waived if they had to waive someone. It ended up being Quinn Cook, but I think Quinn Cook is a better player than Jared Dudley at this stage of his career. And I know he has the value in the locker room, and it's hard to calculate, you know, that sort of, you know, worth to the team. But I think at this point, it's like, why not just, you know, waive him and have him be an assistant coach on the staff. And you could just pay him, you know, I don't know, a high salary, $1 million, whatever. And
oh my God, get out of here. You give him $80,000 like every other like low-level assistant coach. Get out of here. Give him $1 million to be an assistant coach. You are like off your meds. Get out of here.
It's the trade-off though. You got to... Yeah,
I don't know. I mean, I'm not here to tell anybody when their basketball career is over, you know, because like this is their livelihood. This is what Jared Dudley's been doing forever. So like, you know, if you want to keep chasing the dream, chase the dream. But what I would say is like title teams shouldn't be wasting roster spots. The Haslem thing is an interesting, you know, whatever, doppelganger, whatever you want to call it. And the Lakers, I would say that
Udonis Haslem has played for the Miami Heat since 2003. Jared Dudley has played for the Lakers since 2019.
Yeah, there's a difference there.
Yeah. To your original point, if they need the roster spot, it should be him. You can't just be sacrificing roster. And then you can put the decision up to him, like, look, you know, we're not trying to force you into retirement. If you really think you can play and you can get a contract, sure. I mean, you can go elsewhere. But if they're comfortable also saying, we have an assistant coaching spot, and then he has to make a decision, like, what does he want his post-career to look like? Is that front office maybe? I don't know. You guys know him better than I do. I don't know if you have a sense of where.
He wants to do it all. He talks about doing it all. Like, he's like, I could be in the media. I could be a front office guy. I could be a coach. And listen, he still does want to play. I agree with you, Slater. We don't want to like prematurely retire the dude. And maybe he does come back and get healthy in time for the playoffs. And, you know, he is a real key figure in that locker room. And right now, so Jovan, check me on this. They've got 13 guys under contract right now, plus Damian Jones, who's the 14th guy. So they don't need a roster spot so much as they might need the financial flexibility. But maybe they got that with Quinn.
They got it, but they might need a roster spot just because of how many guys they're missing right now. I mean, that's right. Kind of the thing in the COVID season is like every roster spot is valuable. It's more valuable than I think in a normal season. And that's where, you know, they've kind of run up against it now where – like Alfonso McKinney is sort of been thrust into the rotation.
He's not playing. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I don't think it's just cause he had a good game in Sacramento. I think it's cause they need those, you know, kind of to spare some of those wing minutes that they've now lost with, you know, Mark out and AD out and, yeah, you know, Kuz is playing more at the four and going a little bit smaller. So,
you know what else I would say about Dudley's roster spot? I mean, like I watched a decent amount of the G League bubble. The Warriors sent two, you know, guys who are now in their rotation down there. So I watched a decent amount. Like, there's some good young players down there, like projects that you could add to a roster, and like the Lakers wouldn't necessarily play them, but you can grow them behind the scenes like they did with Talen Horton-Tucker last year. You know what I mean? Like Jared Dudley.
And they
like
don't
I said,
have any draft picks, so that's a good way to build around.
So I mean, I know that you mostly want to use these back end roster spots right now for like buyout ads that can maybe like give you 10 important minutes in the playoffs at some point. But also, like, if we're talking about Dudley basically in a sense being like from a playing standpoint a waste of a roster, I understand what he does behind the scenes. Like, yeah, they're I could name 7 projects that could one day be a Lakers rotation piece, and we know Jared Dudley is not one day going to be a Lakers rotation piece again.
I've got time.
Oh, wow. Okay. For one example, the Milwaukee, the Warriors G League team had a guy named Axel Toupin who was awesome in the bubble and he's not on the Warriors roster. He's just played for the Santa Cruz Warriors. Then the Milwaukee Bucks just signed him. So, I mean, this type of stuff's going on around the league. But anyway, go ahead.
Couldn't he also technically medically retire and still get his money? I mean, I guess if they waived him, but like that would be kind of a different way to go about it. I'm not sure exactly how that works, but I think the player still gets, like, they're off the cap. They get their money. So it's more ideal than waiving.
But. Let me ask you guys, didn't Cousins stick around a little bit last year?
After I was going to mention waived? That. Yeah. Yeah. So he was still at the facility. He was at games. He wasn't on the bench, but, you know, he was at practices and working, working out with Lakers coaches, able to use their facility. And, you know, they said basically, you know, that was, you know, because he'd been a part of their program, they didn't want him to go away. They just needed the roster spot. Now he wasn't traveling. He wasn't on the road. And it just is, that is probably the comp. But like Jared Dudley would tell you that his whole value is being in the hotel and sitting around with these guys when they're sitting in whatever ballroom they can be in 6 feet apart and eat, drink wine.
It's not illegal for them to do that, right? Couldn't they just cut him and say, sure, you get on the plane. You're player's assistant. Yeah. You're LeBron's friend. I don't know, whatever, you know.
Sure.
Title they want to give him, couldn't they just be like, and, you know, he'd be rehabbing, you know, he could be on the road and still doing rehab or whatever work he wanted to do.
That might be harder in the pandemic season than in another season, but I'm just spitballing. I don't know if, you know, in the days of like, oh, bring a family member on the charter or bring a friend on the charter, it might be a little tougher. But if you put him inside your protocol somehow or give him some sort of staff position, like you said, player's assistant, maybe it's possible. But
you could even say assistant coach, and then he doesn't serve like one. You know, I mean, in general, it's about how players feel. You know, if you're in coaches' right. meetings and maybe giving opinions and a part of the scouting report, then they view you as a coach. He could just still be on the player side of this whole thing.
Right.
I don't know. I mean, we've probably gone way too deep into this, but yeah.
Rob Pelinka, if you have more questions about what you could and should do with Jared Dudley, give us a call. We'll speak offline, but I think we've probably used enough time on the Forum Club on this particular subject. But I mean, listen, the other thing is, I mean, Jared Dudley, you know, this isn't a career ending injury necessarily. I mean, it's something guys come back from. And so if he wants to play and there's a team that wants to bring him back, you know, there's every reason that he could, you know, be healthy enough to play next year. It just happens to coincide with him being, you know, 36 years old, kind of, you know, at the end of the road, seemingly also. So you just wonder, you know, what's left when he does come back from it. So after all that, you know, best wishes to Jared Dudley, who's a really good dude, and hopefully he gets what he wants out of it.
He's got a great career in whatever he does ahead of him.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
You guys, anything from the court recently that sticks out to you? I mean, obviously LeBron's looks really good right now. Montrezl Harrell, I thought, was just dominant in that Warriors game. It was a good matchup for him. But anything that trend-wise that stuck out to you?
LeBron's triple-doubles, you know, he's been pretty dominant. Trez has seemingly reached a new gear, like you said. And you know, I don't expect Talen Horton-Tucker to get 10 assists maybe again this season. I mean, that felt like kind of lightning in a bottle and kind of a perfect storm. But, you know, he's been really aggressive the last couple of games coming out of the All-Star break, and that's really encouraging. And 73 assists in the last two games from the Lakers. I dare say that is, you know, Warriors-esque, you know, kind of from the early days of their dynasty. And the Lakers are actually playing well against, you know, some inferior competition, granted, but playing really well despite all the pieces they're missing.
I'm going to play devil's advocate on the Trez situation a
little bit. Of course you are. Of course you are, because we can't just have nice things. We can't just say that guy plays really friggin' hard. He brings it every day. He does what he does well as well as anyone in the league. Yes, he's a flawed player. I'm a flawed podcaster. They still ask me to do this every single week. It doesn't mean I'm good at all aspects of it, but I'm good at what I am good at, which is talking over you so you can't make your point.
Well, no, I just think we agree too much on this podcast sometimes. So I need to provide some of that spark. So my thing with
the decorum club.
my thing with Trez is if you just look at the three, so he's won 25 plus in three of his last four games. But as someone who has, you know, closely watched him the last three seasons and then now this season, I've said this many times, like he is a guy who just dominates lottery teams. Like if you look at his box scores and just his game logs, like he is a guy who goes off against inferior competition. So him scoring 26 in Sacramento without LeBron and AD, him scoring 27 against the Warriors, which is just not a good matchup for the Warriors, as you know, Slater and I discussed on the postgame pod, and then him going up against a Minnesota team, which is just, you know, the worst team in the league right now, and just an atrocious defense. Like, those are three inferior, you know, not, well, maybe in Golden State's case, a lottery team, but, you know, two of the three are clear lottery teams. The third is, you know, borderline, although they are good defensively. So I do think that it's positive. I'm not here to just rain on the parade and say, like, you know, it's meaningless, but I do think that the context is, you know, if you look at it even earlier in the season, some of his highest scoring outputs have been against lottery teams and really bad defenses. So this is what Trez does. I think if he continues this and we see this happen against a Philadelphia or a Milwaukee or, you know, a Boston or like some of the better Eastern Conference or Western Conference teams, I will change my tune. But I think this is kind of par for the course with Trez, where when he plays a team with a, you know, a bad center rotation or a bad defense, he's going to light them up for 20 plus and look dominant. When he plays some of the bigger, better defensive teams, that's where he tends to struggle offensively. So, but as for on the court things, I would quickly just say THT, I think, has looked really, really good. I thought it was telling that Frank basically said, as of right now, he's going to be in the playoff rotation. You know, I kind of thought he was a borderline guy that maybe Wes, if he can kind of turn things around the second half of the season, would have that ninth spot or eighth spot, whatever, and THT would maybe be on the outside looking in. But it looks like, you know, there's no reason to not play him with the way he's playing and just sort of the groove he's in. And then I think LeBron, you know, I'm planning on writing about this probably for next week, but LeBron to me is taking back the pole position in the MVP race. I think it's set up really nicely for him to win it now, where, you know, unfortunately for Joel Embiid and the Sixers, it looks like he's going to be out for a few weeks. And that's going to knock him in the race.
Damian Lillard.
That's what I'm saying. Yes. I mean, listen, I know I'm supposed to be on like Team LeBron, but like Damian Lillard.
No, you are not, Bill. You're supposed to be on Team Objective, Bill. And you're going to say that Damian Lillard's making a search.
He's making it interesting. You cannot have a conversation about MVP right now without Damian Lillard.
So I went back and looked at just the last 20 years, looking at the millennium, and Russell Westbrook is the only MVP to not be on a top three seed in their conference to win the MVP. And Russell Westbrook, that's a controversial MVP. I think, like, I personally thought James Harden should have won. I'm going to go down on that hill, that I just, you know, I disagreed with that MVP. But that is one of the more controversial ones. And that is the only MVP in the last 20 years to not be in a top three seed. So I think when you look at, you know, other guys in the mix, Nikola Jokic, Damian Lillard, Steph Curry, Giannis, I think, is going to suffer from voter fatigue. Like those guys, I just think the hurdle is going to be, it's hard to be an MVP on a 4, 5, or 6 seed, or maybe even in Steph's case, you know, like an 8 seed. So I think like those guys deserve to be in the conversation. But if the Lakers are a top 2 seed and Dame is like the 5 or 6 seed, I think LeBron's going to get it, you know, whether that's right or not. So I do think that LeBron's kind of advantage right now is there isn't another kind of guy on one of these top 2 or 3 teams in each conference that can really go toe-to-toe with him other than Embiid. But now Embiid's going to – he's already missed a few games. He's going to miss at least a couple more weeks, and I think that's going to give LeBron an advantage. So I do think he looks like he's probably going to win, you know, his fifth MVP.
I mean, the Lakers have 13 losses and the Blazers have 16 losses. Like, The Lakers
it's
are
close. It is close.
You know, I mean, this is the Lakers are not runaway obvious favorites, and the fact that the Blazers are only three losses behind the Lakers says a lot about what Lillard's done.
And just to kind of add some more texture to that, it's they haven't had CJ McCollum and Yusuf Nurkic for 2 months. And so that, again, like, and you could use that same, again, logic. Again, apologies to all rhetoric professors out there because I'm just abusing all of the hallmarks of rhetoric. But like Damian Lillard is doing so much for his team because of who they're missing. And you can say the same for LeBron with what he doesn't have with AD. But the Lakers are also like what in these games without AD, are they 6-7? Like they're not like setting the world ablaze.
They're now 10-7 overall. But I think
you're
referencing
this stretch with this particular injury. Yeah.
Correct. Like,
with this particular injury, they're 6-7. You know, maybe they'll be 500 after they play Charlotte on Thursday. But, you know, it's not like LeBron has kept them just surging in the West. You know, Damian Lillard is doing more, I think, than he's ever done. He, you know, has won.
Hold on. Is this a Lakers podcast or is this a Blazers podcast?
Well, we're discussing the MVP and there's a Laker involved, but I mean, I'm just joking.
I got you.
Jovan, I think you're right. But like, I think that it is important to acknowledge.
Lillard's narrative's growing. It's growing.
Yeah. No, yeah. I mean, and I'm not saying like LeBron is the overwhelming favorite or like having this insane season. I just think that if he's in the mix, there is going to be like, I would not be surprised if voters just default to, you know, I think Zach Lowe just said it last week. Like this guy's been the best player for a decade plus and has not won the MVP in 8 years. And now it's hard to pick a season that he should have won it, but during that stretch. But I just think
last year.
Yeah, maybe last year. And I think he probably would have won it had there not been the pandemic and the stoppage. But I think it's just, you know, I still think he's the best player in the league. He, you know, be it record wise, you know, the Lakers are up there, be it his production. He is not at the Embiid Jokic level, but in, you know, across most advanced stats is in that kind of 3-5 range in most of them. So I think he has a strong case. I'm not saying he's, you know, again, I'm not saying this is like his 2013 season in Miami, but
I think he's the favorite right now. Yeah.
I think it's shaping up nicely is what I'm saying.
I think it's impressive because I didn't think he would be the favorite at this moment when AD went down. I think the fact that LeBron is still the favorite, I think we agree he's the favorite for a variety of reasons. Not the least of which is I think voters will be mindful of the fact that, you know, we talk about him as arguably the greatest of all time, top two all time. And does he go into the great white light of retirement eventually with four MVPs or is he with five MVPs? And it becomes, you know, how many more chances are you going to give LeBron an MVP vote? And I know that these are not the arguments that anyone will make in their end of year, how I voted piece. But I think that creeps into your mind a little bit when you're, you know, filling out that bubble.
The Embiid injury obviously cleared the path for him. If you were projecting forward, I do think the Lakers are going to finish significantly ahead of the Blazers. Let's say the Lakers are a 2 seed, the Blazers are a 6 seed, and they're separated by 9 games in the win-loss column. Yes, that will feel significant, but right now they're just not. And right now Lillard had 50 and basically a game winner the other night with it, or what, they come back from like 17 down in the last like 5 minutes or something like that. And Heisman moments matter in this stuff, and he has one after another.
Yeah.
I mean, the way he's done this like Dame time stuff in the fourth quarter, I mean, how many backbreaking shots for wins does he have at this point this season? Like 7, maybe? I mean, I'm not talking buzzer beaters, but like the signature shot of a close late game win that the Blazers shouldn't have. And like that type of stuff sticks. It's really why, you know, you mentioned the controversial Westbrook MVP choice. You remember Westbrook was doing the same thing that year where it wasn't it was the triple doubles and people want to act like it was just numbers. It was two things. It was Durant had just left that franchise for dead and Westbrook resuscitated them. And then Westbrook was absurd in the clutch that year, including, remember, to clinch the playoff spot, he hit like a 40-foot game winner on the Nuggets in Denver. And the entire the Nuggets hadn't risen to contender status. And the entire Nuggets crowd was like cheering him on because it was like this great moment for them. I don't know. It was like really odd. I remember that. But that stuff matters. Should it not? I don't know. But like, we're human voters, and what Lillard's done matters. Now, he has to continue this. They have to stay close to the Lakers in the standings. I don't necessarily think that's going to happen. But as of us talking, he's really gaining on the field.
Yeah, I agree. And like our colleague Jason Quick has written obviously so many wonderful pieces about Dame this year. But you know, one thing he's pointed out on multiple occasions, there have been like two or three games where Dame has won games by taking a charge. And like, this is not a player we talk about as a defensive stalwart, and I'm not going to argue that he has rounded into this complete two-way, force. But the fact that, you can point to game-winning plays that aren't just, 40-foot threes, I think does kind of help round out who he has become as a player.
Two more names I wanted to throw in. I already mentioned Jokic. I think, Denver has quietly been ascending up the standings and is right now the five seed, and I think has a outside shot to get into the top four. Probably not with how good those top four have been, but you never know. I mean, they're only a game back in the loss column of the Clippers. And then speaking of the Clippers, I think Kawhi Leonard is kind of the one guy that, for whatever reason, I don't know if it's just the Clippers don't necessarily get the same level of attention this year because of the playoff collapse or whatever. But I think Kawhi, is also kind of in this mix, and he has missed a few games, and that is going to be a concern if he misses some more in the second half of the season. But I do think, if you look at a lot of the advanced numbers, Kawhi is right there with LeBron, with Dame, with Steph in some of these categories. And I think if the Clippers are the four seed, I don't see him getting it. But if they somehow get back to being the one or two seed as they were earlier in the season, I think Kawhi has a shot as well.
Look at us being Jazz haters, best team in the league, and we're not even.
I mean, yeah, I don't see it.
I agree with that, but it's just funny. How about them getting both picked last in that All-Star draft with Durant and LeBron? That was hilarious.
As someone who lived in Utah for a number of years, covered the Jazz, I mean, it's just like it fits so perfectly into the narrative Jazz fans tell themselves about how they can't get any respect and how everyone, like, what was interesting though was then seeing like the way Jazz players also sort of fed into that, like after I don't even remember what game it was, they lost Philly, they weren't getting certain calls, then they started talking about like how Utah doesn't get any respect because they're a small market, and it's like you can't be buying into like the nonsense that your fans say on Twitter. Like, it's just like you can't have actual players like parroting like I've said rhetoric so many times on this podcast. I need a new word, but like the rhetoric that your fans are pumping out on social media. But whatever. But I digress.
We could close it with some Jazz hate. I appreciate it.
Well, listen, I'm going to close it by thanking you two guys who are actually tied at the top of my MVP rankings. I think you guys should be co-MVPs of this and all episodes of the Forum Club. Very grateful for you and appreciate your insight as always. To our listeners, thank you for tuning in and supporting the Forum Club, subscribing to and liking stories on The Athletic. It's been a crazy year. I don't think that we can really fully capture what a strange year this has been to be a sports writer in the United States. Obviously, whatever you do in your life has been much stranger because of the circumstances of the year. So it's not any different for you than it is for us. But we've worked hard to tell interesting stories, have interesting conversations about the teams we cover, and just really grateful for everyone who has tuned into this podcast each week. Here we are, second half of the season. Should be exciting for the Lakers. Should be exciting to another playoff run. See if they can defend their title, if they're able to make it without running out of gas. I mean, a lot of really compelling stuff to come, and it's look, it's only going to get better. So thank you for listening. Thank you for subscribing, and we will talk to you next week.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.